All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, September 12th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings, DFSR.com. Still time to grab that free trial. I think it's we still have it for 7 days. Or we roll it back. You know this better than
me.
We roll
7 days, but that's gonna go away later today. So that's gonna be down in 3 days. But how about I'll do this since I already mentioned it on the podcast and I don't want people to listen and be pissed. I will turn that off officially tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time.
Okay, so still time to grab a 7-day trial, but less than 24 hours to be able to do that. DFSR.com/NFL gets you the opportunity for that. All right, buddy, week one in the NFL. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good word to sum it up. It was depressing at times. It was boring at times. It was unpredictable at times. Do you have like one good word that you think could sum the whole thing up, or is it just kind of all over the place?
Well, I don't think I have one good word to sum it up, but I can kind of relate it to another experience. You know, it's kind of like when you're a kid and you're waiting for Christmas, right? And you're sitting there and you're like, Christmas is going to come and this is going to be the best thing ever. And then you go down there on Christmas morning and open all the presents and it's just like a bunch of socks and like, you know, crappy candy in your stocking that you don't even like. And, you know, and then you wake up in a cold sweat and realize it was just a nightmare all along, except for this one. You just don't wake up like the first.
There's a bobblehead of Tarik Cohen. You've never heard of him before. So like,
you're like, Dad, you got the cheap Tarik Cohen.
I asked for Jordan
because they could get licensing rights for that guy.
I asked for Jordan Howard. This isn't him. It's the wrong number.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was just a crazy week. I mean, we'll go through this for sure, but and maybe it's just the fact that NFL was far away until this first week, but the names that come up on the top, the leaderboards across the various positions, like this is why DraftKings feels comfortable offering a $1 billion contest for getting the perfect lineup, right? Like you could never, like the fact that Bell and Johnson.
Well, hold on, before you get into that,
the top 20 in terms of rushing yards this week, like that's just totally insane.
We'll go into that in a second. I do want to just before we go into the individual performances real quick. I want to just set a mood for something. So you and I were up at the DraftKings kickoff bash this week, which was great. DraftKings brought us up there for the weekend. There was a whole bunch of industry people up there. You know, probably some names that you've heard of if you're on Twitter or you followed. You know, some like you know the pro type DFS players. A lot of those guys were there. So we were all there, and we were all in a you know party room kind of place, we're a bar watching the games and. The whole place was just silent for like the first, I mean, how many minutes in a row was just like not.
And I thought it was because they were people like me. I was like, oh, these guys are just like cool customers. Like, I'm not going to sit there personally and yell and I don't watch football in bars anymore. I'm not going to be in the bar like yelling and screaming and like have my jersey on, like waving my terrible towel like I might have been when I was 22 years old. And I was like, oh, okay, they're cool. They got a bunch of different lineups, like exposure across a bunch of different guys. And so, yeah, everyone's good. And I was like, okay, I get it. These are kind of my people. But then when the first moment, so this was like for like an hour, right? And then finally one chalk guy did something and the whole bar erupts.
It was Le'Veon Bell got like a 6-yard carry. Like it was like,
let's go Le'Veon.
Right. It was just like, oh, right. Everyone's quiet because everyone's plays stink. Like this is it. Like, you know, a very good sampling of the top industry people were there. And they're all kind of on the same guys, right? Like outside
Fitzgerald at a 70% start, Bell at 72, David Johnson at 60, Aaron Rodgers 24, you know, two different defenses made up 50%. Like, yeah, there was a lot of chalk and the best players tend to be on that. So it was a somber mood, at least on FanDuel.
It was just so funny because it was just so quiet for so long. There was really nothing going on for the first half. Things started to pick up in the second half. But, you know, we'll go through some of these individual performances that we can. And we'll try to decide on this podcast before we're going to kind of focus on week one here and then deciding on what we want to really what we want to focus on for week two, like what we think are real possible trends. Where we don't want to, you know, areas where we maybe just don't want to completely overreact to a certain performance. And so, because there's things to be learned from week one, but there's also sometimes you can take it too far and just say like, you know, Le'Veon Bell is going to average 10 carries for this year. It's clearly just not going to be the case. So we'll try to decide on some of these performances on where we're going to land for week two. Before we get to that, some of the injury news that came out of week one, some big ones too. Obviously the biggest one is David Johnson's wrist. He's going for a second opinion on the wrist Though the first opinion was pretty bad, that he was going to miss significant time and possibly
even go on IR. Possibly.
Yeah, yeah, even go on the IR. Kerwin Williams came in and carried some of the load there. I'm sure he'll be a popular play if Johnson is out. Kerwin Williams is a pretty small guy. Like, I can't imagine him shouldering a ton of the carries here, but that's going to be something that we're going to want to keep an eye on going into week two, because obviously, you know, when you lose the consensus, basically the consensus number one overall fantasy pick and probably best fantasy player in week one, a lot of things change, right? And this is also the reason why you play DFS and not season long, because this is just, you're just completely brutalized. If you just lose David Johnson in the, you know, before the, in the third quarter of week one. But so that's something that most people are going to be on top of, in just terms of like where, you know, where some of the usage is going to come after that. Andre Ellington is still on that squad as well. Other two injuries, probably in order of relevance, Allen Robinson is going to miss the rest of the year because of an ACL. Brutal. For a lot of reasons, he's been kind of an underperformer. He's also in a contract year this year, and to head into your contract year with a torn ACL, injuries are all bad. I feel even worse sometimes about it when it could cost the guy, like a guy with real talent, a payday. We're going to try to probably figure out, you know, still got Blake Bortles. I mean, can you see some of the targets? They have other wide receivers here like Lee and Hearns. They're not particularly good, and the quarterback stinks. I mean, how much do you think this kind of could affect things going into week two?
Yeah, I mean, it could affect things going into week two. We have seen Hearns put up big numbers in the past. He's not really like a target monster, though. The thing about Robinson, he can make big plays, but he can also just get double-digit targets with regularity when he's healthy. And so, you know, it's hard to say exactly where those targets are going to head. You know, I think a lot of people have, you know, gone to the dance with Marquise Lee before and left feeling wanting afterwards. I don't know. It's a tricky situation. I would say Hearns will be a popular big tournament play because he does have that explosive upside. But it's all going to come down to what the other options are for cash games, because I don't think you can call him safe. You know, we've seen that team float a lot of targets in a lot of different directions and have it not turn into fantasy production in the past. And there's no real reason to think that missing Robinson will make anyone necessarily like a slam dunk play in my mind.
Yeah, their quarterback stinks, and that's mostly the reason. Like, the targets are all not created equally depending on who's throwing them typically. So, and Bortles is not the guy. Heavy targets don't always translate to heavy production. The last one, Kevin White is going to miss the rest of the year. Like I've said, I put this in order of importance. White is, yeah, he's headed to the IR for the Bears team that was already a complete question mark in terms of wide receivers. Like the previously mentioned Tarik Cohen, he led the team by a long shot by just like a country mile in targets in week one. He had like something like 12 targets. You know, they did line him up in different parts of the field. White, he's still not a receiver, though, and I just don't know. This is going to be another one to kind of take a look at in like terms of like how we react to certain players' week one performances. Where do you see this White thing affecting the Bears?
Well, the Bears are another tricky team because Cohen comes out of absolute nowhere, and everyone keeps looking up thinking it's Jordan Howard doing stuff, and it turns out it isn't. You know, Cohen winds up going on to being, what was he, like one of the top 10 target getters in week one or something like that? Just totally absurd amount of targets. We've seen Howard catch a lot of balls out of the backfield in the past, but I don't think anyone expected this Cohen guy to come out of nowhere like that. So where does it leave us? You know, like he got 12 targets in week one. He was operating out of the slot. A lot of the stuff was out of the backfield. It's hard to say. Like, do you picture him? Like, is he going to be a Danny Woodhead type for them going forward, just out of nowhere? Because he only had the 5 carries, but he did have 8 receptions. So I don't know what to make of that.
My gut tells me, without like looking, I haven't looked too closely at week two matchups yet, and so I'm just, you know, take this with a grain of salt, because I'm just kind of, this is more of a reaction than we haven't really gotten into our week two analysis yet. My guess is he's completely overowned next week, right? I think people will kind of stare at this performance, think that it's going to be a normal sort of thing, and I just don't suspect that it is. But again, that's just me sort of speculating. I hold the right to change that opinion if they say like, look, you know, after I look at some of his snap counts and just like how much he was on the field, actually on the field as compared to the production, because that matters as well. Like, and if most of his lineups were actually more from running back, then that I would take as it's not gonna look good for a great first, like he's not gonna replicate this kind of performance. But my guess is he just is overowned because he had the big, like one of the biggest weeks, and people tend to fall in love with that kind of thing. All right, let's talk about some of the things.
28 snaps last week, by the way. So 28 snaps, 13 touches. and 17 total plays went in his direction. That does not strike me as sustainable on its surface.
No, completely not. Like, that's actually what I just what I wanted to hear in terms of, like, not wanting to play the guy when other people will want to, right? Now, they could say they're going to increase the snap count, but I just can't imagine that's the case. They have Jordan Howard there, right? So, like, I think that those sets were very planned. He made the most of them, and people will kind of fall in love with the production, and it's just it reeks of a guy who's going to fall back into probably what we thought he was going to be to start the season. All right, let's talk about
nobody you've ever heard
of. Yeah, let's talk about some of the let's talk about some of the performances from week one and what we can make with them. So I know you were big on wanting to talk about some of just like the overall leaders and like what was maybe real in terms of what we can expect going forward and like where it does change our opinion on the guy, or, you know, where we like, you know, the previously mentioned Cohen, where we, maybe our opinion is not as changed as some others will be. Do you want to start with running back or receiver? Your call, buddy. Dealer's choice.
Oh, we'll go with running back. So yeah, let's do fantasy points. We could start with fantasy points. We can go into yards as well. Cause these names, again, why DraftKings felt comfortable offering a $1 billion lineup. The names at the top of the running back charts are just nothing you would have ever imagined. Like, you could have gone, like, I think you could have pulled every single fantasy player in the world and just let them try to pick the top 10 fantasy scoring running backs, and not a single person would have gotten them. So it goes Kareem Hunt, Mike Gillisley, Leonard Fournette, Tariq Cohen, LeSean McCoy, Todd Gurley, Ty Montgomery, Stewart, Ezekiel Elliott, Terrence West, Melvin Gordon, Dalvin Cook, Jordan Howard, Chris Thompson, Mike Tolbert, and it goes on. And it's until you can finally get Devontae Freeman after LeGarrette Blount and Marlon Mack. Or Marlon Mack. Is that this guy's name? So it's a totally, totally unpredictable week out of the running back position, at least in terms of total fantasy points scored. Now, some of that obviously comes from touchdowns, but some of it just doesn't. You know, and if you just go by yards, the list doesn't really get any less familiar. The actual yard leaders, Kareem Hunt and Dalvin Cook, two rookies, right at the top of the list there. Cook obviously impresses on Monday night, 22 carries, 127 yards, tacks on three receptions as well. What do we make of these two guys going forward? Because you still don't need to pay top-tier prices for these guys. You know, Dalvin Cook right now, 6,700 going into Pittsburgh next week. Kareem Hunt is 7,800, so you're paying a little bit more for him just because, you know, they had the benefit of seeing his huge Thursday game against New England. But is the running back situation totally shaken up going into week two? I guess that's my major question. Like, Bell and Johnson were both bad. Johnson's hurt. None of the other good running backs were good. Is week two going to be the week of the cheap running back, where week one was the week of the expensive running
back? Well, I just think the guys where I am willing to sort of like change my previous thoughts on are these exact kind of guys, like Hunt. Like, I think with Hunt, Cook, and I'm going to throw Fournette into the group too, because he was a fifth. Yeah. He was fifth overall in yards, and he's a rookie as well. You know, where I am willing to sort of change our week one philosophy on a player are these rookies, because these are the guys that we just really just didn't have any clue on. And if the teams are, so like these guys, as opposed to like Christian McCaffrey, right? Like McCaffrey, I'm fine keeping where we had. Like we saw the kind of volume he can maybe expect in a good matchup, and it's kind of relatively unchanged for me. But the teams like the Chiefs, Vikings, and Jags, who were just fine saying like, we're just going to give, these are our guys, right? They're going to get all the touches. They're going to get 20 carries a game, especially if we're winning. All these guys were winning, so it helped them all in that respect. You know, they probably all existed on the high end of their carries because they ended up being in the perfect situations, like just running out leads exactly near the end of the games. And so a good.
I was going to say that. What? You can't count on Jacksonville to be up to the point where passing makes zero sense for them, right? Like that's an unusual situation for them to find themselves in. So I do think the 29 total touches might wind up being his highest of the season.
Oh, it will be. Oh, no, yeah, no. And this is what I'm saying. We're not going to go overboard. Like taking him to 18 or 19 touches, it seems like fair, or maybe even that will be a little bit high, mostly because now we have some of it baked in where you get depressed points if you're an underdog, and Jacksonville does stand to be an underdog. But I do think it's a good sign that these were the team's just go-to guys. There doesn't seem to be, there's no running back by committee really going on here. I know McKinnon got a couple carries here, but Cook really just did carry the load. I think for those guys, I'm willing to tick up what we saw as their maybe baseline, their baseline carries projections, mostly because we're just hedging on the unknown. And I think that's completely fine to do from a safety point of view going into week one. But I do think that the team's made it pretty clear what their path is going forward, and that these three rookies are going to be the guys for their team. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think I like Dalvin Cook maybe as the best of this group, just because Minnesota did beat a real team in New Orleans. You know, Sam Bradford looked good. They do have other offensive tools there, more than, say, a guy like Fournette, who, you know, there aren't really a lot of other offensive options there. And so normally you might hear that and think, well, great, they're going to give him the ball all the time. But it doesn't really work that way. You know, like if you're behind by 10 coming out of the first quarter, most teams don't have the wherewithal to like keep a steady hand and stick to the running game. And it's not like Fournette was dominant on a per carry basis either. Like he had 100 yards, but it was on 26 carries. So I don't think that he kind of lit the world on fire. Cook, on the other hand, 22 carries for 5.8 yards per carry, seemed a lot stronger there. To your point, none of the other guys, Latavius Murray, Jerick McKinnon, really seemed to be threatening him. So sometimes with rookie running backs, we see them come out like McCaffrey and kind of share the workload, and especially down near the goal line. Sometimes we get the Cook situation where it's him and then the field. And I think out of that group, I'm most bullish on Cook going forward, particularly because you don't have to pay that much for it. Kareem Hunt, though. So Hunt goes out there and obviously lights the world on fire with the absurdly good game against New England. 98 receiving yards, 198 rushing yards, seem to be, for all the world, like, you know, the next answer to Le'Veon Bell's, or the heir to Le'Veon Bell's throne, is the receiving and running back here. But he is expensive, and he is up against Pittsburgh. I mean, do you think he's underplayed, overplayed, or properly played at 7,800 at Pittsburgh?
At 7,800, probably properly played. I haven't really looked too closely into I just really haven't looked too closely into our projections for next week. So I'm just holding out a little. I'm going to hedge a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we haven't even updated carries and stuff yet. So our projections are going to be meaningless for right now. But what does your gut tell
you? My gut tells me that he will be pretty highly played. I think the usage that they saw out of him, he was their primary guy, right? The 17 carries were mostly born out of, they just had some longer touchdown stuff go on, and like the drives just didn't need to be as long as I think they probably would have. I think he actually would have gotten more carries in a slightly different game script. And so, but because like he was just,
I said Pittsburgh, by the way, he's up against the Eagles, so it's Cook against Pittsburgh.
I think there was no one else on that team that got any carries. Like, They ran Kelsey on a sort of a wildcat thing, and then like West and Hill got a same thing, like a couple reverses. But like he's their guy, right? He's their running back. There's nobody else, and there's no one else that's going to push up against them. I think that 17 carries in the right game script here, because I think the game's at home, that could be low for him too. And I think that that's the case. He is in a good spot. The Eagles do have a pretty good D though. So yeah, this is another one I'll hold out. The 78 price tag is not cheap anymore. The good job by the sites to price correct that in terms of just some of his usage. But we are going to learn a lot. And these rookie running backs, I think all across the board on them, not McCaffrey, but the three we mentioned, I'm willing to probably tick up based on our baseline projection, because I think that their teams are pretty committed to them. Just in terms of running back, another like new situation guy, Mike Gillisley got 15 carries and scored 3 touchdowns. Do you see him as, now they ended up playing from behind, and that was kind of the end of his usage for the Patriots, but do you see him, the Patriots, like maybe wanting to lean on him, or is it always going to be in a situation where we just can simply never trust like what the Patriots running back plans are?
Yeah, well, I think the real question always with the Patriots is, do you want to be a week early or a week late on their running backs? Typically, we take the week late approach because no running back has really ever settled into being a good DFS player on a week-to-week basis. And so while we've missed, you know, a few of the notable games, you know, who was that guy that scored 3 touchdowns, 4 touchdowns in that one Monday night game? We didn't play him, right? Whoever, that Gray or something.
Oh, Jonathan Gray, yeah.
But normally that's where I like to be with the Patriots running backs. I will say this year does feel a little bit unusual. It's not like they've been totally anathema to playing some running back like Corey Dillon or something. You know, they have had guys that they've leaned on more directly in the past, even Blunt last year to some degree. Gillisley, what I really like about him is that he is the definitive goal line back. And you can envision a scenario where if the game script took us in a different direction last week, where he would have gotten even more carries than this. So he's definitely one to keep an eye on. He's still really cheap. 6,700 is not very much to pay if he is indeed going to touch 20 carries a game sometimes. Like, that's a very, very affordable number. I don't really know. I haven't really looked at where the lineups are going to come in. And I don't really know if running back is going to be a spot where we want to pay up or go cheap or whatever next week just yet. But I will say I was very encouraged by his goal line play. One thing to note is that James White did have 10 carries in this game where Gillisley had 15. So it doesn't look like he's quote unquote the man, but I think we observe it for one more week and we just kind of keep our eye on the situation at the very
Congratulations to the Baltimore Ravens for having two running backs in the top seven in carries this week. Javorius Allen had 21 carries and Terrence West had 19. So good luck with that one. That was 40 carries between the two of them. They shut out the Bengals. That game was awful. That game was all complete. We had access to every single game. That game was completely and utterly unwatchable.
Unlike a lot of the other games. That one stood out as notable.
On the other side of the ball, just in terms of not wanting to completely overreact going the other way, I mean, where do we stand with a guy like Le'Veon Bell? Only 10 carries. That game was completely weird. The game script, they scored a defensive touchdown, which always just cuts down on some of the usage for a guy. A guy like him, the carries were so low. It was his first game back. He really hadn't done anything in the preseason. Do we want to overreact to that, or are we fine just keeping our projected usages on Bell intact and kind of like waiting another week to see if he's really just like not going to be featured in the offense? It's really hard for me to imagine that's the case.
It is hard for me to imagine that also. I mean, we did talk about the potential rust issues, coming in with not a lot of preseason work. That did bear out in some level. You know, he only had the ball in his hands 13 times over the course of a whole game, which is just staggering to me. We have seen with running backs. I mean, the thing I'll say about Le'Veon Bell, and we see this more with running backs than, say, wide receivers, is sometimes you're just old, right? And I don't want to say that that's the case with Bell at all. He's only 25 years old, so he's not ancient by any stretch. But there is a point where you kind of cross this point of no return or whatever, and all of a sudden you get a step slower, and then there's just some fast guy waiting to supplant you. I don't really see that there's anyone to supplant Bell, and he really hasn't crossed those like traditional carries thresholds. Like last year, he only played 12 games, so it's not like he's... I don't know, one of these guys like DeMarco Murray or something from the past where he just gets 400 touches in a season. That being said, he did pile on a lot of touches per game last year, and at some point it wouldn't be so shock me for him to wear out. This matchup against Cleveland was about as ideal as humanly possible, and Pittsburgh had every reason to give Bell the ball. Like, this is the part that concerns me. Bell has completely torched Cleveland in the past, and the fact that they were up 7 to start the game effectively, like that punt was in the first drive, that just makes me feel a little bit more concerned than I would usually. Like, there's no obvious reason he didn't get his touches here. So then the things that start to creep in my mind are, well, is he out of shape? Is he a little bit hurt? Or are the Steelers just going to try to use Brown as the new passing game? Because Brown, unlike Bell, totally resumed prior form. 11 targets, caught all 11 for 182 yards, right? Like, that is the kind of game we wanted out of Antonio Brown. But yeah, Bell, it's very, very troubling to me. And I mean, he's so damn good that it's hard to imagine writing him off after one bad game. But that's about as bad a performance as you can imagine from a guy.
We might get lucky and just not have to worry about it too much. He does play a Minnesota defense that's pretty good. So I don't know if the defensive multipliers come to the point where we're not so worried about that, though. Some of these other running backs aren't in great situations. All right, let's go over to wide receivers quickly here. There's more to talk about with running backs. We'll get more into our game by game breakdowns and our cash game picks later in the week. I feel like we could probably just keep going here forever. But let's go into the wide receivers real quick and just talk about some quick overreaction, underreaction to some of the performances over there. Who stood out to you as like, what we want to make of some of these target leaders, what we want to make of some of the yard leaders? Where do you stand on some of these receivers?
Yeah, so I think if you go by yards or fantasy points, you're going to be confused. There's a lot of guys that you just wouldn't have expected. I mean, the top 10 guys in yardage this week, I would say only Antonio Brown would have been anywhere in people's probably like top 30. So it was Brown, Thielen, Tyreek Hill, Austin Hooper, Golden Tate, Danny Amendola. That's all the 100-yard receivers. Then you have Kareem Hunt, Zach Ertz, Stephon Diggs. So just already seeing two guys from Minnesota in that top group. Granted, great matchup against New Orleans, but interesting to see nonetheless. Like the fact that Bradford was able to hook up with Thielen on 9 out of 10 and then Diggs on 7 out of 8. Maybe you keep your eye on Sam Bradford too as a value guy going forward. Those guys do have some recognition. Like both Diggs and Thielen have put up big totals in the past, so it's maybe something to keep an eye on. But then you get Brandon Cooks at 10th on 3 catches for 88 yards. This was not a banner week for wide receivers. It wasn't a banner week for offenses in general, as we saw from running backs. But that's just on yards. I think that we tend to focus a little bit more on targets. And if you sort by that list, you'll see a lot more names you recognize. But just on the sheer production from week one, it's very hard to imagine that any of those names outside of Antonio Brown are favorites to return to the top 10.
I'm glad. I'm glad that list looks a lot different than the targets list, frankly, because that means I think we're going to be getting a tremendous amount of value going in on some of the receivers that we do have some historical context on already. Now, some of the guys you mentioned there are fine. Like Hill's in a new situation where he's more of a wide receiver one type, so you might be a little more bullish on him seeing that kind of usage going forward.
Yeah, we saw some great games.
Right, exactly. So, like you can, he's one of those guys. But, you know, in general, when you look at the targets list, then you said that the list is much more familiar, and there's just conversion problems here, right? Like, well, so DeAndre Hopkins topped the list, but, you know, you talked about it a little off the air. Like, do we want to make anything of his 16 targets because of the quarterback play?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I talked about this actually extensively in the ebook, but not all targets are created equal, right? And by the way, if you want a free copy of our ebook, you can go to dfsr.com/ebook, just like that, and get an ebook on how we designed our NFL and baseball systems and kind of the factors we consider. But yeah, for Hopkins, he can get 16 targets all he wants, but if it's going to be Watson and Savage throwing in the ball and doing so very poorly, like we were watching that game, you know, on and off just because the Jacksonville D was making us want to drive a stake into our own hearts, and we're just like kind of rooting for them just to give up some points. I don't know, just to get some consolation prize there. But like there were a handful of plays, at least three that I can recall, where Watson threw the ball in Hopkins' direction and the ball just went flying over his head at 100 miles an hour, and Hopkins like didn't even turn around. So like there was one where Hopkins was like, that was me, that was my bad. But it's like, how many plays do you need where the quarterback and wide receiver are totally out of sync? Now they're still going to count that a target, right? Obviously, like he was the intended guy. But the fact that he didn't even know where the play was supposed to wind up isn't very reassuring for me. It's not very reassuring in two ways. You know, it looked for all the world like the game plan was to feed Hopkins the ball a lot here, and he didn't look very prepared for it. And likewise, his quarterbacks didn't feel prepared either. So now Hopkins still cheap. You know, he's still a guy who has been like a credible $9,000 sort of receiver in the past. But the fact that he was just so poor at converting these targets does give me a little bit of pause. Now, he's not on the main slate this week, so it's not as big a worry as usual. And that's kind of a long time to spend on him. But just because he's a target leader, 16 targets is an absolute ton and would be an NFL record if he did that in every single game, right? So worth considering. After that, though, we get Larry Fitzgerald, Randall Cobb, Amari Cooper, Golden Tate. Does anyone... how does that go?
Yeah, that strikes me as in terms regular. Of, you know what I mean? I think this is good. I think this is what we kind of expected. You know, we had Fitzgerald up near the top of our target list. He was a pretty heavy play. He dropped a touchdown. His week, you know, from a fantasy perspective, looks a lot better. He dropped it and he kind of got pushed out of the end zone simultaneously. But like, again, red zone targets are kind of what we want to see. It'd be interesting to see how Arizona is affected in general without DJ, because that actually is just like kind of a team-wide cascading issue. Because the other problem is, like, in terms of quarterback play, Carson Palmer looked horrible, right? So it's not like Fitzgerald's getting any kind of great QB play either. Palmer's been a
Carson Palmer can still be safely said to be an upgrade over Tom Savage and
completely, but he's still not a very accurate passer. Like he hasn't really been all that accurate for his career. Anyway, it's still good to see that he's in there. Amari Cooper, he was a pretty popular play in tournaments. He dropped three straight touchdowns. If you missed that one, they just went. They looked his way three straight times from like first and goal from the three, like a fade route, an in route, and then an out route, and he just dropped all three of them. So again, his week looks a lot different because he already caught a touchdown. I think you see him as another, I'm willing to go back there, although we talked about him as being sort of a volatile guy in terms of just not having the best hands. Now, that was probably just unlucky to not catch some of those passes, but he's had conversion problems of his own. And actually, from him, it's not his quarterback play. It just could be him and some of the routes he runs. So, but again, he's fine. Golden Tate's a great one. He was not 100% for the game, shadowed by Peterson, but Peterson was on him a lot. And to get 12, to convert 10 out of 12 targets on that matchup against Peterson, that's a great sign for Tate. Me too. And their wide receivers just in general, like Jones caught a touchdown. Kenny Galladay obviously was a big highlight guy, catching probably the best touchdown catch of the week.
Well, but that's exactly why you can get Tate, I think, going forward, is because Galladay had the splashy touchdowns, because Jones pulled a touchdown too. Like, there was no inherent reason why Tate shouldn't have gotten a touchdown also, and in which case he was already in some of the top overall FanDuel million lineups on just the sheer volume and of targets, catches, and receptions. So, or receptions and yards. So I really do like Tate going forward quite a bit. I think he's very clearly continuing out in that role as the number one look.
And the other guy that we kind of talked about and touted a lot going into this week was Terrell Pryor. Kind of one, you know, speculating, or at least I was heavily speculating that he would lead that team in targets and be, I thought it would just be a great play. He didn't. He was seventh in the league. He had 11 targets. He was right up there. He had his own conversions issues as well. He straight up dropped a touchdown, although it would have come. Well, I don't even qualify it as a drop because it,
Is it, I was going to say, is it really dropping the ball if it never makes contact with your hands? Like, we were joking that if that was a basketball play and they did the replay, the ball wouldn't have changed direction, so you would have said it was out of bounds.
Right, so like not a great time there. I believe it was holding on the play too, so it would have been called back. But still, to see that kind of those kind of targets, I do think is a great sign for him going forward as well. So I think from wide receiver, I'm not really going to make, I don't think we're going to make too many huge changes from our wide receiver projections that we had going in from last week, at least in terms of projected volume. I think we were pretty much right on there. I think it was just a matter of, you know, running bad a little bit on touchdowns and a couple other guys just kind of coming out of nowhere and really having pretty high conversion rates. All in all, I feel pretty comfortable. Anything else that you saw stood out to you this week before we get out of here and we'll be back? I mean, before I tell you when we'll be back.
Yeah, some other pass catching notes. Zach Ertz, most owned tight end on FanDuel and DraftKings, was great. 8 targets, 8 catches, 93 yards. I think you'll see him continue to be a highly owned player going forward. Still a reasonable price, just 6,100. He might be moving in, you know, with the change of personnel there, he might be moving in more into the, you know, tight end one sort of category alongside guys like Olsen and Kelsey, you know, probably not in the Gronk group just yet. Worth noting, though, that Alshon Jeffrey did have Norman on him for the entire game. So I want to keep an eye on Norman going forward. I'm not Norman, but Jeffrey as well going forward, because I think like Nelson Aguilar was a huge beneficiary. You can't count on that going forward for like your season long leagues. I don't think anyone was going to play him in DFS anyway. But I do expect a big bounce back week from Jeffrey. You know, he was targeted a fair amount in the red zone and just in general. So I think we see a bounce back week from Jeffrey. Just want to, you know, remind people, especially with wide receivers are one of the positions that it's most quietly matchup dependent, I think, because so say like running backs, you know, if you're going up against one of these incredible running defenses like Denver or something, everyone kind of knows like, oh, okay, don't play running backs against those guys. But there are teams that give up a lot of passing yards that still have one shutdown quarterback and or cornerback rather. And Washington kind of qualifies there. They weren't very good against the pass overall, but Norman's still a very, very effective secondary player. So just keeping an eye on that going forward, and just a general rule to keep an eye on as we continue to make picks throughout the season. But but overall, you know, week one, one of the things that I liked about week one, Doug, was that it was about as bad a week of football as I could imagine, and I still enjoyed the hell out of it. So I'm glad football's back, and excited to keep going deep on these pods throughout the season. I think we might try to do 4 a week this year. And
yeah, no, we'll be back. Minimum, we'll be back Thursday talking cash game plays, and then Friday game by game breakdown, and then we'll see if we can get a Wednesday pod in there as well, talking about the week to come. All right, we're dfsr.com/NFL. Get you for the next 24 hours. Get you that free 7-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to give you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB. Give you access to our Player Lab, which helps you filter out based on a bunch of different criteria to put together some lineups for both those sports. So go check those out. Really powerful tools. Free for 7 days, and then $29.95 a month after that. All right, buddy. Talk to you again later in the week for some more football.